I may tie in what I say to what Vicky just read to us so beautifully. I may not. We'll see what happens. My part of our Spiritual Renewal Week, which is the last Sunday of it in Ananda Village, is happening now, but many of us came back early, was part of a group of four who answered questions. Our two-hour segment was to answer various questions. And the last question I was asked, we only had five-ish minutes to answer, but I didn't get to say what I wanted to say. So I'm going to say it now. Because I just feel like it's something that needs to be, well, I'm not even going to put it on you, I'm just going to put it on me. It's something I really want to say. The question that was asked in the course of the spiritual life, sometimes we need to blow off steam, was the way the phrase was put. And how can we blow off steam in a way that doesn't blow us off the spiritual path? I even took that question and answered it in a way I wanted to answer. So there's a lot of self-interest in what I'm doing right now. On Thursday night at Spiritual Renewal Week, we had the world premiere of something that we're going to perform here in October also, which is guided by Marcel Hernandez, who has a real gift from God for theater and acting and writing and so on. We created a pageant based on Whispers from Eternity, which we read every week, adding dance and music to it and presenting it all in a poetic, theatrical way. For the last, really, I think more than 20 years, in the back of my mind, every time we had a big event, I thought there was something original that we could do with Whispers, and I had the idea that people could dance to those poems. But I could never figure out how to do it. And I mentioned it to Marcel about 9 months ago, and 2 weeks later he comes back with this wonderful creative presentation of it. So we have worked on it, like maybe there's 15 of us or 16 who are all involved in it. You'll see it in a couple of months. Since last January, I mean, many, many, many hours of work, and all of it just absolutely delightful. So there was this big sense of creative effort that was happening, and that was in my mind. Also there at the village, they're halfway through, or more than halfway through, constructing this Temple of Light, which is really an iconic building that's going to make Ananda world famous. People are going to come from all over the world just to see it. At the present time, this huge dome, which is 56 feet across with another 8 feet of gallery around it, is all exposed wood. So as Dharmadas said, it's like one giant guitar right now. So gradually all that wood will be covered, and even though the acoustics will remain good, right now it's an instrument. So they had a huge kirtan in there, even though it was unfinished, in the fine tradition of Ananda, just if it'll keep the sun off, then we'll move in. So we were all in there, and there was this wonderful kirtan, and I like to feel the energy through my body. I've not really done anything more than childhood ballet, but we all have past life memories, and my past life memories are all about theater and dance, and just it's really strong in me. And the kirtan was so powerful, and there was so much room there, that I really wanted to, you know, get the whole room up and have us all just be leaping and dancing about that space. But I was afraid to do it. I just didn't know what would happen if in the middle of everything. It reminded me, although not so extremely, I had an experience once at a Christmas meditation at Ananda where I suddenly felt like laughing. Really, just I just wanted so much to laugh. Later, Swami actually said that laughter is actually a manifestation of Kundalini in certain circumstances. I mean, that's what the experience was for me. Believe me, I'm not given to that kind of experience at all. So this really stands out for me. But just right in the middle of the Christmas meditation, when Swami in the room, we'd been there for hours in absolute silence, I just had this deep desire to go, you know, just a big, hearty, ho, 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 you know, into the silent room. And I was so deluded in my mind, I thought if I started laughing, everybody would just start laughing with me, and pretty soon the whole Christmas meditation would turn into a giant laugh. Fortunately, some shred of reason held on, And I resisted the nearly irresistible impulse, but I was so convinced it would make everyone happy that I very nearly did it. Well, when I was in the temple, I felt if I had could have counted on a few cronies, you know, forming a happy line with me, we would have just been around there on the edges. So I was thinking about creative art and in ways that I think are very important for Ananda. This is also the result of the book I've finished writing about Swamiji, because creativity was it was absolutely the hallmark of his existence. But nothing that Swami Kriyananda did had anything to do with him. He was not compelled in any way by personality. And in fact, when a man who wanted to justify leaving Ananda so he could go out and record the songs that he'd written and become a performer in that way, Swami encouraged him not to. He went everywhere and anyway and never accomplished it. He said, you know how it is. Sometimes you just have to express yourself. Sometimes you just have to write a song. And Swami said, no, I don't know how it is. He said, I never think about expressing myself. He said, I think only about how can I serve. And he said, everything he's done artistically, writing books, music, photography, architecture, everything has come not from how can I express myself, but how can I serve. Now that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, he writes in his book, which the final version after he wrote that book seven times with several different titles. The last one was Art as a Hidden Message, a guidebook to self-realization. And in that book, which is very, very, very interesting, you end up feeling that before I can become a saint, I have to become a creative artist, which is kind of like, really? What if I don't have any talent? You know, how do I, does everybody get to be a Michelangelo before they become a Saint Francis? It's sort of a very interesting premise that he puts in there. The answer to it, I heard from Dana Anderson, who started what she calls the Academy of Art, Creativity, and Consciousness. She herself is a very gifted painter and also a talented writer. She sings very well, too. She's just a person for whom creativity is very natural. And she talked about the place of art in traditional societies. She said, in our culture now, art is reserved for the professionals. And she said, because the professionals are so expected to perform, many artistic professionals that you think would be very happy are actually quite miserable, because it's not anymore about freedom of expression. It's about being weighed and measured. And so it's just become another definition of self-worth rather than a natural way that we say who we are. So what Dana explains is that in traditional societies, art and creativity are simply integrated into the life. The Indian women make these beautiful designs with rice powder in the morning in the front of their doorsteps, and by night they're all messed up. And in fact, it's considered very sad if your mandala that you make in the morning is still there in the evening, because it means no one came to see you. You know, there's no activity in your house. Nobody is loving your house and coming in and out. And traditional garments are always covered with embroidery or painting or beading. And men would have tools and weapons and so on that they would carve themselves. And people would tell heroic stories and write songs about what they did. And the whole community would come together and sing and dance. And so it's just like every day, in one way or another, we wouldn't always be thinking about things. We would also be using our hands, using our voices, using our bodies to do something about how we feel. And on the spiritual path, feelings are the entire issue. Superconscious intuition is pure, calm feeling. It's a very important point. It's not like we think our way to spiritual realization. We feel it, and oh, I'm going to be able to tie it into the reading for just a split second here. You know, we have an actual inner experience of the reality behind this world, and we don't have it by just staring at it and saying, it's unreal, it's unreal, it's unreal. There is a path of jnana yoga, neti, neti, not this, not this. But even that path ends up with a perception that comes out of our heart first. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And the heart is also the place where all these feelings roil around. And the way Dana phrased it, in just such a simple, brilliant way, she said, once art is removed, once creative expression is removed from the natural fabric of life, all those feelings just have no healthy outlet. And so she said, in our culture, we have two ways of dealing with our feelings. One is to suppress them, and the other is to project them onto others. And that's pretty much the world that we're living in right now. Joseph Campbell, who was a professor who talked about myths and stories and cultures, and he did this beautiful set of conversations with Bill Moyers. It must have been 25 years ago now, but it's classic. And Bill Moyers said to him, what happens to a culture when they lose touch with all of their stories, when they no longer celebrate their culture? And Bill Moyers sort of looked out the window and he said, this is what happens, because all those feelings have no place to go. So interestingly, on the spiritual path that we're on, starting with Master was a creative artist. He was a singer. He wrote music. He wrote poetry. He wrote songs. You know, and that's not just the given. Some saints and masters do. Swami Shankaracharya wrote, Vivekananda wrote, St. Francis wrote and sang. And it's not merely that they find that's a way to communicate, but they're also showing us, you know, how it is that we're supposed to live. Whispers from Eternity especially, Master just pours so much feeling through those poems. And it's such a wholesome, a pure expression of all the different, the Whispers from Eternity are every aspect of life that you go through, he describes. When you're under criticism, when your body is broken, when you're having an economic difficulty, when you feel lonely, when you feel suicidal. It's just somewhere in Whispers from Eternity, there's a poetic expression of that particular feeling and a way to transmute it into an upward way. And when Swami was writing about the purpose of Ananda, and all through this long book of mine that you'll be able to read in a few months, it's just Swami, step after step after step, is always trying to solve whatever is going wrong by doing something new and creative that will give all of us a chance to express ourselves. So on Saturday, in my 5 minutes, I was talking about, you know, we need to become more free in this. We need to dance and sing in a more spontaneous way. But there was a piece of that I felt was left out, that is also why I'm wanting to fill it out today. It isn't really just a question of what the community does. It's how we ourselves respond on a sort of day-to-day basis, whether we establish in our lives a creative, upward-moving manner of self-expression, with this is art as a hidden message, which will finally give us a way to resolve all of these endless, either created in the moment or surfacing from the past, vrittis of emotion that come through us. I have never been a person who paints or draws. I used to think I didn't have a good visual sense. Later in my life, later meaning in my 30s, I realized I actually did, but I was one of those children that never was encouraged in creativity for its own sake. Everything was always measured, and as soon as I wasn't good at it, I wasn't interested. But when Surendra's wife, Tushti, Surendra and Tushti lived in this community for about a decade, they ran East-West Bookshop, and then they moved to Portland, and then right after they settled in Portland, they moved to India. It was one of those classic, they had just unpacked the last box when Swami literally called them from India and asked them to move to Pune. So then they went to India for a few years. But at the end, well, the end of her stay there, because She was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And she was a yoga teacher and an athlete and a very strong person. You would have expected her to live to be 100, but God had a different plan. So she had this pancreatic cancer, which is a very difficult one to deal with. And eventually, after a few months, they came back from India. They went back to Portland, and it was clear. I happened to be with her in the hospital in India. She was fighting to get well, but it wasn't working. And we had this little conversation. Twisty, do you think your soul is trying to stay in your body, or do you think your soul's trying to get out of your body? I think it's trying to get out, she said. And then just like a great devotee, just turned her attention here. 5 minutes later, she's giving all her possessions away, telling Surrender who should have what. It was like, I thought I was supposed to stay in my body, but I think I'm not supposed to stay in it. And she went in that direction. So I ended up with her and Surrender and her friend Willow, who's now called Naranjana. We're up in Portland in Diva's living room, Diva and Gangamata's living room. Tushy has a hospital bed. There's a big table over here, which is also their office. Surrender's sleeping in the living room. I'm sleeping in the bedroom. Naranjana's sleeping in the meditation room. Diva and Gangamata are in their bedroom. We lived that way for about 3 weeks because Tushti's body was really strong, and so it took a while for her to separate. So that was a lot of time just sitting at the table here. Sometimes Tushti was active. I've written all of this up for those of you who are interested. It's somewhere on the Ananda Palo Alto website, Letters from Asha. So for a while, Tushti was active, and I gradually understood that my reason for being there was that every so often she would reach a point where there was a question. And then we would try to work our way through that question about dying, about her life as it was, some dilemma. We would work our way through that question. And then everything would go on for a while. Then there would be another question. When she finally was beyond questions and went into silence, even though she hadn't left her body, then I felt free to leave. But I had a lot of days with a lot of time on my hand, and some other girls had visited Tushti a few weeks earlier, and they had brought all this collage material because that was something they could all do together. So I didn't have anything to do, so I go over here and I pull this collage material. I've never had much respect for collage. I just never got what it was. But I didn't have anything else to do, so I got a little pair of scissors and, you know, the glue like this. Oh, man, for like 5 days, I'd wake up early in the morning and I'd rush out there to make my little collages, and I'm cutting out my little things and I'm digging through the boxes. I became totally obsessed. And I mean, I'm like a child, and I make this, oh, look at my little, like this. And I just, to myself, I just dismissed them. It was just entertainment. So I end up with, I think, 4 of these. But you know, when I was leaving, I just couldn't quite throw them away. And I brought them home, and I just stuck them in a drawer. And every few months, I don't like to keep stuff. I throw things away. I pull them out to throw them away. I just couldn't throw them away. And finally, I gave them to Helen, and she laminated them, you know. But it was really interesting to me. I didn't even know what I was doing. That's what I finally figured out. You know, these little pictures, you know, with a little horsey here and a picture of Jesus over here and a little silver thread. I mean, they're not art. You know, they're bad craft, but you know, they're okay. I'm not bad, they're fine. But I just, they were the experience. You know, this was the experience of Tushti dying, which was really one of the great experiences of my life, to be able to be there with her. And a great deal of it was cut and pasted onto those pieces of paper. And it was a revelation to me when I finally was willing to understand what had happened there. So when we're talking about being childlike in our creativity, it's not just getting up in the middle of a kirtan and making a line dance around the room or joining into one of our theater productions. I mean, all of that is possible. It's when feelings come to us, trying to find a creative and an interesting way to uplift them. Just as simple as that. I saw somewhere, you know, on the internet, you find these things. I just saw this picture of these African women in an extremely impoverished circumstance holding up this fabric art. I believe it's appliqué is what they do, where you cut little pieces and make a picture. This beautiful picture of this flower, and it was so gorgeous, and the context was so contradictory. So I followed through to find out what it is. It's from some African area. I feel like it's the Sudan, but I'm not informed enough to know enough what's going on there. So one of these African culture places, the tradition is the women make, they're just sheets. They're sheets for the bed. And they use, they're like wedding sheets. It's like, or like part of a woman's trousseau. And a lot of them, when they had to flee because of the horrible chaos going on in their home places, they would wrap whatever else they could carry in whatever this was. And then when they find themselves refugees in some place nearly as impoverished and threatened from where they came, this is the one thing they know how to do. And so the women all get together, and in the midst of horror, this extraordinary beauty comes up. And not only is it just as art really lovely, but can you imagine what it's doing for those people who've lost everything to be together like that, just snipping little pieces of fabric and thinking how to make it beautiful? Now, this is, in fact, exactly what Vicky was reading to us about. Can we see a reality behind the reality that we're in now? Is it possible? I read another story about a family that was hidden during the Nazi occupation. Lived because somebody protected them. And so it was one of those stories which you all have heard, where for like 2 years or 3 years, these people could never go outside, never go to a window, absolutely had nothing to do. And I believe it was a young couple, and they may have had a child. And they did survive. But somewhere in the middle of that, the man who had been a businessman, or had been an active man, and he was still in the prime of his life, he wasn't elderly, he started painting little boxes. And every day he would go upstairs to the little hidden attic room, and he would spend all day painting these little boxes. And fortunately, his hosts were able to smuggle in enough for him to do. But afterwards, he said he really just would have gone crazy. Just there, one with nothing to do, but also with no way to do anything with the energy that was flowing through him. So he just painted little boxes. And this is what is really meant by becoming a creative artist before we can become a saint, which is that art is the way creative art and arts and crafts, all of it, whether it's cooking, whether it's planting a garden, whether it's stenciling a design on the wall of your house, whether it's writing poetry, painting little boxes, pasting little bits of paper onto a piece of paper until you have some interesting design. But what happens to us is then we become healthy. We become emotionally healthy. We feel what we feel. We move it out in front of us. We participate in clarifying it. And then in the end, we're at peace. We're free. Because it's passed through instead of held in to us. And maybe incidentally, along the way we can serve. You know, we can make little cards that we give to our friends. We can color in a coloring book. You know, just get out all your colored pencils and just find a way to do something uplifting, creative, and beauty-producing. That is sadhana. And if we're not great at it, who cares? Swami used to often quote his mother, who said, "If something is worth doing, it's worth doing badly." Which is what I thought of when I was doing the collage really often. You know, I don't have to be good at this. I just have to enjoy it. Navashan and Sai Ganesh have run or are still running an import business. And one of the products they import have imported are these little, bigger than purses, but little carry bags, medium-sized carry bags, carrying bags that are woven, and they're bright colors. I have two of them that I really love. They're very practical. Apparently, they are made out of discarded plastic bags that some impoverished group in India has dyed into bright colors and woven into those baskets. And I like it as an item, but every so often I look at this and I think, because I've seen impoverished places in India, and I've seen piles of discarded plastic bags. But you think, like, how much self-esteem, joy, fun, upliftment, release of tension and anxiety is created from gathering up the garbage, making it beautiful, trying to see what looks nice together. And what that does is that suddenly makes us a channel for a very different kind of energy than just the energy just sits there and wonders and worries. You know, the definition of self-realization in an odd way is total self-forgetfulness. We tend to think that self-realization is becoming more and more conscious of myself. But the actual reality is that we realize that self was a complete illusion. That's why Swami Kriyananda says, I never accomplished anything. I never did anything. A lot went through him. But when it goes through you, and when you allow it to go through you, then all of a sudden, by the very definition of it, is that you have gone away. And that, whew, is the great relief. That's what self-realization is to realize that the self I thought was the self was not really the self, that there's another self, and that one is much more fun. But when we become creative, every one of you knows this, no matter what it is, no matter how small a project, no matter how whatever it is. I used to sew. I didn't like the sound of a sewing machine. This was when I was in my 20s. This was my, you know, make your own granola, grind your own wheat to make your own bread for it phase. I didn't like the sound of a sewing machine, but I liked to sew. I especially liked to sew by hand. So I made complete garments, lots of them, just completely by hand, because it was just so enjoyable just to do that. And you just forget, and you become like God. You really do. We really do. We become like God. We're enthusiastic, we're joyful, we're interested in creating something beautiful, even, no matter how little or big it might be. And we become Him. We tune into that consciousness, and the little self just goes bye-bye. And once we learn that in one way, then we can begin to use it in every way. When I first read the first version and the multiple versions of Swami's book about creativity in the arts, it was so fascinating to me. Because you see, this is also Dwapara Yuga. This is not the time of suppression. This is the time of integration. And all of us as part of our sadhana, the arts as sadhana, that's integral to our path. That's what our masters have demonstrated. The arts as sadhana. Art meaning creative expression. Whatever form that takes. And we pray to God and ask Him to use us as His instrument. We ask to see the reality behind the illusion and become then part of that divine flow. God bless you.